Welcome to Pediatric Insight, where we have candid conversations with members of the Child Health Advisory Council and some of the nation's top academic child health leaders. I am Wesley Milliken, CEO of Career Physician, and your host. Each conversation addresses a leadership challenge or opportunity that's top of mind for today's pediatric leaders. The council breaks it down based on the wisdom and experience obtained throughout their distinguished careers. Today, we are going to talk with the Child Health Advisory Council Executive Committee about strategies for impacting student and resident decisions to pursue careers in pediatrics and pediatric subspecialties. And wanted to kick the conversation off with really just general comments from the group on, you know, the issues that are impacting both medical students and residents' decisions to either go into pediatrics or to subspecialize in pediatrics. Valerie, maybe could ask you to kick it off.
When you pose this topic and this question, I kind of thought back to myself and sort of, what was I thinking in medical school, and what kind of things was I thinking in residency, and what really impacted me? Because I certainly never had a plan to go into pediatric oncology. It wasn't something that was in my DNA in medical school. And I think it comes down to, first and foremost, there's kind of two buckets. There's the intangible things, and then there's the tangible things that really, I think, influence people. And I think early on in my career, most of my influence was the intangibles, the opportunity to give service to others, to help children, experiences working with pediatricians that did research on trying to improve child health. And then I would say in residency, working with a role model, a woman physician who was just an incredibly gifted, talented clinician, but just so kind and empathetic. Her patients adored her, and she was so highly respected in the medical center where I was training. And, you know, I looked at her and I said to, you know, I just want to be like her. She is just the epitome of what I want to be like when I'm a physician. So I think it's those intangible things that I think the culture of the community you're working in, how the team works together, how happy people seem to be. If all those things align with your clinical skill sets and your intellectual interest in the subject matter, then I think it's a win-win-win-win-win. So then, you know, I started to think, well, what are tangible things that could get in the way of that decision? And I think there are many, especially now for our residents and medical students. How much debt are you graduating with? What's the cost of living where you're going to go to? What's the work-life balance that you might experience with the job description that you're given? What are the metrics that you're going to be held accountable to? Do they seem daunting to you? Even things like how well the offer letters are written can sometimes change people's perception. So I think there's intangible things and there's tangible things. And I think sometimes it's the tangible things that derail people's interest in a profession because they decide that maybe they can still be happy in medicine, even if they're not doing exactly what they thought they wanted to do, because some of the tangible things, the salary, the location where I can practice, the kind of practice, the work-life balance, it'll be more amenable to some of the other things in my life.
I've always thought that one of the reasons that for years and years and years and years, 10% of the graduating class went into pediatrics. They might have varied between 9 and 12%, but regardless of how other specialties fluctuated, pediatrics was always constant until somewhat recently. And I always thought that part of that was because for many and maybe most medical students, the only physician they've ever known before going to medical school was a pediatrician. And pediatricians tend to be great role models. However, I think that, you know, there's a saying that the difference between you are as an adult later in life and who you were as a child are the people you've met and the books you've read. And I, like Valerie, I'm a nephrologist because of Robert Hickman, who was the most amazing, kind, ethical person who would do anything for his patients and was so kind to me. Those role models make such a difference. One of the challenges that med students have is that even though they've only been associated with a pediatrician prior to medical school, they don't see pediatricians very often in the curriculum at med school. They're not taught by pediatricians. They oftentimes, the pediatric departments at a children's hospital separate from the university so that they don't see them in the halls. They don't have quite the same relationship. And I think that's been a big missed opportunity. And then I think some of the things playing into what Valerie is talking about and the tangibles is actually the location of medical schools often are in urban areas where it's the cost of living during medical school is high, and let alone the residency. And you then have all the cost of tuition. And so there's much more awareness of finance as times have changed over the years. In the Northwest, we had practices in many small communities. And I told people I loved going out to our teaching sites in Helena, Montana, and Billings, Montana, and Pocatello, Idaho. The pediatricians there were happy. They really were positive about their careers. It was different than the lives they had and the opportunities they had and the role they had in the communities were different than maybe practicing in a large urban area where most of the med students get their clinical exposure. So those are some of the things that I think have been lost a little bit along the line in terms of being able to be exposed to pediatricians early in medical school. And secondly, not being able to see the impact pediatricians can have in their communities because medical schools are often located in large urban areas.
Greg, do you have a thought?
I think that Valerie had a really nice observation about how the sort of people that she enjoyed working with during medical school really had a lot to do with her selection of pediatrics as a specialty, sort of the intangible. One of the things that I've always been very impressed with is that people who go into pediatrics really enjoy working with the families and the opportunity to sort of advocate for the child with the families and to seeing, you know, the child's health take the predominant role in bringing people together. And so I really think that people who go into pediatrics in general get great joy out of bringing people together. And sometimes in stressful situations and very tense situations, I have seen medical students really respond to mentors who show them how to make that happen, because it can certainly be a magic and a very joyful moment when that really happens.
Craig, I had a conversation with a candidate we were working with the other day, and he talked about the most painful and the most joyous opportunity in his career has been bringing constituencies together around caring for a kid. I think that's a real thing. One of the other things I noticed when we were looking at the workforce study was just a statistical difference between the decrease in MD graduates, osteopathic graduates, and foreign medical graduates as far as those going into pediatrics and pediatric subspecialties, and the decline was a bit larger in allopathic graduates versus osteopathic and foreign medical graduates. And I just wonder if the council had any thoughts on that as to relevance. Danielle, do you want to start?
I've put down some thoughts that relate to Valerie's initial sort of framing of this as intangible versus tangible. And I've been in institutions, four different institutions, where two of which had a large number of foreign medical graduates and actually had an osteopathic, one of them had an osteopathic residency training at the time that osteopathy and medical sort of were merging. So I've had exposure to all three groups. And these are general observations relating to the intangible that Valerie mentioned. I think if, you know, foreign medical graduates, as you know, have often a highly skilled individuals who are coming from all over the world and may not have even been in pediatrics, but have decided to go through residency training in pediatrics, may have a different perspective, a global perspective on opportunity and clinical practice. And if I reflect back to my own decision in pediatrics, really, I could have been happy in any of the field. There was a sense of urgency and intensity in going into medicine that I think I still have, although I'm getting old. And I see that in the opportunities. If somebody's coming as a foreign medical graduate, their path has been not easy. And so there's that intensity and urgency of action and opportunity. So that's one conversation. In terms of the DOs, I don't know if that, you know, and again, we're not talking comparison statistical significance here. The training, as I understood it, osteopathy is a bit different, and perspective is a bit different from that of allopathic medicine. And I think that that may play into the vision and the intangibles of what's important in a career choice. It is sort of a reflection. So I don't know if this is that difference is significant or not, but I think the fields, the pathways to getting into pediatrics are different for those three groups. And just a comment on in terms of Valerie's comments about the choice. It's a tough time. There is the clinical practice has changed, right? Even exposure. I remember when I trained at Harbor UCLA, which I loved, and Martin Luther King because I'm UCLA grad. I mean, you were part of the workforce in a way. I'm not suggesting we go back to that, but you were part of the workforce in a way that made you feel essential. And perhaps that happened during the pandemic and when we heard our students say that they want to be part of the response and service underlying that intangible of really being there. And then the challenges and the tangible are everything that you guys have listed. Politics and academia is one that I would put at the top. Debt, cost, et cetera. The other intangibles are not really there necessarily. But I think there are different motivations for going into medicine and how you create meaning from people's different perspective in life, opportunities, the vision for our field, I think is all wrapped up in those decisions.
Thank you, Danielle. Arnie, as you think about people coming to the U.S., you know, looking to continue their training, what have you learned about what might inspire them or motivate them to think about pediatrics?
I think this has been alluded to, whether it's an international medical graduate or one in the United States. It's about the future. My major conclusion when I was trying to make this decision was that by doing pediatrics, I could help an individual for 70 years. Whereas if I went into internal medicine, I was going to be lucky if my patients survived 5 years. So I think it's about the future and emphasizing the future and how to change the future and providing that inspiration to medical students, I think is absolutely key to their decision-making. Why do international students often go into pediatrics? I think it's for exactly that reason. They have the experience of their own childhood and the difficulties that they face and the difficulties that young people in their country face, and they know they can make a huge difference for the future. So I think a focus on the future is one of the key deciding points. And then I would emphasize again what Valerie said, and it was true for me and probably true for all of us. There was a mentor or an inspiration person who created the environment of positivity about pediatrics, showed us an example of how we in the future could make a difference as they were currently. So I think those two issues are really important.
The cost of medical education in many foreign countries is quite different than in the United States too. So the financial imperatives that replacing medical school debt are quite different for medical or international graduates. Do you think that has any role in terms of lessening the financial impact?
Yes, I do. And I hope that's changing because some American medical schools are foregoing tuition because of the understanding of the impact that debt has on these future choices. So, yes, I agree. I would also emphasize that there's a changing environment in relation to thinking about international medical graduates. So, in the past, there's been a bias that maybe the education wasn't as strong or other prejudicial issues. Our experience in Cincinnati with international medical graduates, and I think it's probably everyone's when they actually go back and think about it, is that these students who come to the United States for training are highly motivated, they're certainly smart, and they end up being great physicians, great pediatricians. We had a system where we focused on attracting international medical graduates here in Cincinnati. And that outcome over the years is that 20% of our faculty were born in another country. That emphasizes the contributions that international graduates have made to our specialty.
My experience has been that foreign medical graduates not only are critical to our workforce, but it bring a variety of excellence in prior clinical experience. It may be even in different field, for example, OB, et cetera. And so I think whatever the myths were about sort of preparedness for residency training, that's been debunked in terms of, and obviously it's still very competitive to get a residency, as it should be, position. But I think we have a wealth of individuals who come with very different life experience. And, you know, I'm teaching now in the School of Public Health. I have the advantage of having students from all over the world, and the perspectives they have in terms of community, sort of how to approach public health issues, both locally and globally, it really expands our horizon in terms of possible solutions to things we face here. So I think that's been a real strength. And the other, I do want to comment on the DO, because I think, again, having been exposed to residents who were in the DO track, their perspective in terms of holistic medicine was different. It was eye-opening for me. And I remember when I was at CHOP as a resident, one of our most skilled fellows, neonatology fellows, was a DO. And I had very little knowledge of that particular track. But I think, you know, that's also been debunked in terms of any biases against DO. So I think it's looking at the workforce and the complexity of the problems we're facing. And I hope we can maintain an allopathic students kind of address the tangible issues that are barriers to achieving some of the things that they really want to go to. I'd like to pose one question, is that I'm noticing, this is anecdotal, that a number of students are choosing high intensity fields such as emergency medicine. And we know the path of emergency medicine has broken away from being in pediatrics necessarily. Many of them are in emergency medicine departments, although they do pediatric emergency medicine. I wonder if folks have thought about that in terms of the intensity and what's being offered as opportunities when people choose pediatrics.
You know, this is just conjecture, but of the high intensity specialists, neonatology, critical care, emergency medicine tend to have the most fellow applicants. And it's interesting to observe that those specialties tend to have very shift-like schedules. In other words, their weekly work is more regulated with time off and manageable for personal issues and things like that. The compensation sometimes is better in those specialties as well, but there is a difference in their style of work, and that they tend to be shift kind of schedule.
I would add, I mean, you look at hospital medicine, I mean, a lot of people are going into hospital medicine, and it's a newer specialty with boards. But it's interesting when you see it from our perspective as a leadership firm, it's hard to find people who really want to lead in that specialty. And that's a generalization, but it just speaks to me to the reasons people are going into, as Bruder said, the shift-based specialties for quality of life and kind of set schedule reasons. Craig, in the few minutes we have left, you want to share some thoughts and maybe some tactical or best practices leaders might think about as we look to inspire the next generation?
I think as a leader, whether it's a departmental, division, clinic, whatever, it's really important when you perceive the issue of helping people understand why pediatrics can be such a fulfilling specialty, is to make sure that the people that you work with and take that opportunity of leadership to help them understand the role that they can play in the decisions that people make, to help them understand the importance of mentorship for students and helping them work with families and helping them fulfill the mission of providing a child's health and the joy that that can bring to the patient. I think oftentimes people don't take advantage of their leadership position to make those statements because they tend to feel they're obvious or everyone understands it. And that's not really the case. Oftentimes when starting out or dealing with the stresses of raising a family, salary discrepancies, whatever, some of the bitterness comes through. And I think it's really important for emphasizing the fact that medical students really are watching and that the mentorship that we provide with them and how we approach and the joy that we get from our jobs is really something that they can benefit from. So that's probably the single most important thing I think that leaders can do to try and help people understand what a wonderful field pediatrics and how fulfilling it can be.
I always loved to be able to have a medical student in clinic and have a patient come in who had had cardiac surgery maybe 10 years before and be able to say, this patient would have been dead without us, and look at this patient now. And the joy of seeing that outcome and having that outcome be a long-term positive outcome, I agree with Craig, is one of the best ways to inspire students. Valerie could say the same thing about her cancer patients. Everybody could. The long-term outcome and the positivity is something we need to emphasize, and I hope we haven't lost.
One other thought is that we are a global community, and probably children reflect that more than any other demographic. And I think it's embracing that. And the other is, you know, for me, when I went into pediatrics, I thought public health was at the core of this, both helping individually, but helping in terms of populations. Okay. And I think we're speaking all about that kind of the future, what Arnie talked about in terms of what it means for the future.
I would add one other point to Craig's list, and that is be informed. Know about the NIH loan repayment program that specifically targets pediatrics. Emphasize the many programs are providing funds to pay for tuition, for additional training of individuals that they might not otherwise have been able to do. I mean, there are many things that are going on in departments that offset, I think, not completely, but some of the financial burden and debt burden, and really help people to realize what their, you know, ultimate goal is for their, you know, having a wonderful career. And I always like to tell the students and the residents, you might be doing this for 30 to 45, 50 years. You better be picking a discipline you like, because it doesn't matter how much money you make. If you have 40 years of unhappiness and, oh, what if I had done this? You might be really regretting your career decision. So I think that's part of that optimism that Craig was articulating in his comments.
To follow on all of the comments, I think if you're a medical student or a resident and you've just got innate leadership skills, to me, I think accentuating the opportunities to become a leader and to have bigger impact probably earlier in your career. You can look at it that we're forcing more and more young leaders into opportunities before they're ready, but I think it's also an opportunity for somebody that wants to be a leader to potentially get opportunities earlier in their career. So I think accentuating that and showing examples of how people have been successful will be beneficial. Thanks again to the Child Health Advisory Council. It was a great conversation and a lot of work in front of us as it relates to our workforce shortages, but hopefully people will benefit from this conversation.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. If you have a question for our council or have a future topic suggestion, please connect with us at pediatricinsight.com. The Child Health Advisory Council is comprised of a diverse group of emeritus deans, department chairs, division chiefs, and child health executives recognized for their leadership contributions in academic pediatrics and child health. The CHAC's impact is further bolstered by council specialty advisors who are active current national leaders in each of the subspecialties in pediatrics. Collectively, the 30-plus members of the CHAC bring unmatched wisdom and experience to career physicians' executive search and leadership development endeavors for its clients. Our council members include the following physicians: Bruder Stapleton, Christine Gleason, Craig Hillemeyer, Renee Jenkins, Danielle LaRocque-Arena, Valerie Opapari, Bruce Rubin, Robert Sawin, and Arnold Strauss. To view our council members' bios, please visit careerphysician.com and click on the Child Health Advisory Leadership tab.